Welcome to the Retirement Lifestyle Show. I'm your co-host, Roshan Langani, here with Adrian Nicholson, back with another great episode. Adrian, how are you doing today?
Everything's going well on my end, Roshan. Happy you're back. Looking forward to this episode. All good things going on, so ready to go.
Excellent. That's great. So we've got what I think is going to be a very useful episode for our listeners today. And I'll tell you where it came about. So I recently, during the holiday time and maybe a couple weeks after, saw some friends I hadn't seen in a while, two different groups of friends, different events, and I had a couple people ask me similar questions, which was basically, what should I do now? And to give you a little bit more background, I would say this applies to anyone based on a specific place they are financially, but the people I had spoken to were both professionals that, they've been working now for probably 10 years, pursued advanced degrees, and they felt like they're now at a place where they can actually focus on their finances and figure out what to do. So I was, what we'll go over today are just some of the basics, some of the foundation. And then next time I get asked this question, I can give them some thoughts and ideas, and then also point them to this episode and say, hey, here's where you go. Here's how you build the foundation. So I'll start us off, Adrian, and feel free to add along the way any sure. items that you have. So, and the reason I said at the beginning that this is not age specific is a lot of what we talk about are going to be for people who've just started working full time. Maybe they are recent grads and so on. However, I think of multiple clients I've worked with. One person comes to mind. I had a client years ago who was divorced, did not work while she was raising the kids. The husband, took care of all the finances, and she was she actually had her law degree. So she was a lawyer by trade, and then at age 50, she was starting out with nothing saved. So she's 50. Her kids are older, so fortunately she doesn't have to take care of them. But now at 50, she's got to start planning for her retirement for the rest of her life with nothing. And what she was able to do in the next 16 years, because she retired at 66, she was able to build enough savings for her to retire comfortably and live for the rest of her life. So a lot of this stuff we talk about will be foundational, and some of you might think are basic, and where you are in your financial life, this might be something you've done already, but I think a refresher is always useful if that's where you stand. And if you're someone who's just really starting to focus on this, regardless of age, I think it would be useful. As I mentioned, the people who got me thinking about this idea are 40 now. So they're not recent grads by any means. It's just now top of mind for whatever reasons, whatever catalyst they have in their life. So the first thing I'd look at is tell everyone, when you're building that foundation, save in your 401k to the match. The reason I say that is because your 401k match level is 100% return. So if you're putting some numbers to it, and I'm going to keep it simple like I like to do, if you make $100,000 a year and your company tells you, well, if you put in 5%, we'll give you a 5% match, that means you put away $5,000 a year and they give you $5,000 a year. Now, if you don't put away that $5,000, they don't give you that additional $5,000. So I put this on here first because there aren't many other places where you can get 100% return on your money right away. Adrian, what thoughts do you have on that?
I mean, that's a great place to start. I like to define it as just free money. If you're able to get to that match, that's just a good way for you to get that, what you described, Roshan, 100% return. 401ks are definitely great because there's also that tax benefit that you can get as well. So it's a really great place for you to start. And I actually had a different one that I would, give advice to or start out with, Roshan. Do you want me to get into that, or do you want to expand more on the 401k and match?
No, please go with yours.
So I guess if I got that question from somebody, I guess I would kind of have a question back and just say, well, what are your goals? What do you want to achieve? What gets you up in the morning? What do you want to work towards? I think that's a great way to start a conversation, because that can really help structure your plan and really motivate and see what kind of financial decisions you should make. Because again, that's just a great way to start. What do you want to work towards? What do you want to achieve? What are your goals? And that is a way for you to say, okay, this is what I want to do. How can I do that? What financial moves, decisions can I make now or put in place now to start working towards that?
Yeah, I don't disagree with that at all. I will challenge you and say, let's just say my goal is something shorter term, right? Let's just say it's to buy a house in 3 years, right? And I'm picking that short-term goal on purpose. Would you then tell me to not take advantage of the 401k to the match?
So that's definitely a tough question. I'm glad you asked that, because on one hand, you want to just save up for a house. So if you put money into that 401k just to get the match, that's, you know, still a good move. You're getting that 100% return. But if you get put in a position later on in the future where maybe you want to save up to have a down payment on the house, depending on how you want to finance it, and you don't have the excess cash built up, then you might be in a position where you're forced to pull money out of that 401k. And as we know, that can cause penalties, and that can cause a whole ordeal of things to happen with that money you're starting pulled away. So that's something where you really have to plan ahead and really see if that's the route you want to go.
Yeah, I think this is a good time for our disclosure. This is not financial advice. These are just some thoughts and ideas we have. Please do your research. Consult with an advisor. If you don't have one, reach out to us, and we'd be happy to see how this applies to you. But, you know, speaking in this more theoretical world, I'm going to get back to our conversation. Mm-hmm. Here's my thought on that, Adrian.
Mm-hmm.
First, with the 401k to the match conversation that we've been having, there are programs where you can borrow money from your 401k for the down payment. That's one thought. Second, if you actually had to take the money out of the 401k, you're taking money out of the 401k for the down payment. Once again, not advisable, but let's just say based on the goal, that's what you're deciding, or that's what you want to do. Well, in that case, when you're taking the money out of the 401k, after the tax and after the penalty, you'd still have more money than not getting the match, right? Let me just do some rough math on it. You put in $5,000, they give you $5,000. So there's $10,000 in there. You take that $10,000 out, you're going to pay a 10% penalty. You're going to pay, let's say, federal taxes at 24, state taxes at 6%. I'm just using local stuff for us in the DC metro area. So you're paying then about 40% in taxes. So you put in five, you take out, you're trying to take out 10, you give four to the government. Well, you still have six. So you still come out ahead. The other thing I've seen just in my experience that I think also why I also have this ranked higher is a lot of times these home goals change. They get adjusted, they get pushed back. There are different loan programs available where maybe you don't need as much down. And just while this is the home, and I'm using this just as a short-term example, while this is an uncertainty when you'll buy the home or the down payment needed, et cetera, I would like to, while it's uncertain, get the what is certain, which is that 100% match. So I don't disagree with you that focusing on the goals are important. I think that's important the entire time you're planning, and you'll see that it's going to come up for me pretty quickly on my list of things when you're building a foundation. I just feel that it's a rare scenario, but they do exist, but it's a rare scenario where I would forego, Adrian, as you said, the free money.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one thing I would also add to that as well, since we're just kind of having this debate on that, where if you are contributing to that 401k to get the match, and then one of your goals is to purchase a home, have enough for the down payment, however you want to finance it as well, if you're putting money into this 401k, you're also limited to what that 401k offers as far as the investments you have, where another, let's just take a basic investment account, your investment options tend to be a lot more, you have a lot more options out there and a lot more ways that you can save, invest, to maybe build up that down payment for that house faster than what you have into a 401k. That's another thing that comes to mind that people need to consider out there, that you're probably locked into a certain few investments that might not fit best for where you're trying to do. I guess that would be my only thing that I throw back at you, Roshan.
So let me make sure I understand this correctly. So you're saying, well, there's the possibility that you could invest in something else that could outperform the 401k investment.
Yes.
Though I don't disagree with that, I think it's unlikely, though not impossible, that you're going to invest in something that'll return 100%.
Mm-hmm.
And we're talking about the 401k just at the match level right now. If you view that match, you know, if it's a dollar for dollar match in our example for 5%, you're getting 100% on your money. Mm-hmm. And yes, we did go through the numbers of, well, what if you take it out early? Early as in for a home down payment, but what if you don't? Right? What if it does in fact stay there for retirement as is the intent, and you got this match along the way? So once again, though I don't disagree with you that there may be better investments out there than the investments in the 401k, I think it's unlikely you find not only a better investment, but an investment that will outperform by 100% to do better than the match you would have got. Right? Mm-hmm. Those other investments are essentially starting starting behind because of that match.
Yeah, and I got to imagine the listener viewers are right now, hey, I'm agreeing with Roshan 100%. That's really hard to beat. I'm definitely pulling with Roshan on that. And I guess the one thing I would have our listeners and viewers just consider, and which we brought up, and how this really is going to vary from individual, because another key point I have on foundational rules for financial planning and saving, which I think it's played to this as well, is what does your cash flow look like? How much money do you have coming in, and what do you have going out? Because that also really drives how you want to take advantage of the 401k, how you want to save up for this example we're using for the home, because that too is going to be a main driver just overall when it comes to your financial plan on how you make decisions, where you allocate money, because your cash flow, how much income you're getting and what your expenses look like is going to be a big driver throughout all stages of your life here.
Completely agree with that. I think I'm one step past that, thinking that we're now allocating cash flow,
mm-hmm,
right?
Mm-hmm,
but
yes,
that is the things you pointed out, what are your goals and what are your cash flow, are both very important. And the goals piece, I've got here listed as well coming up, but yes, we're talking right now in my mind, we're talking about, I'm viewing this as someone that really hasn't had a decent cash flow before and does now, right? And whether that's because you're a recent grad that just has cash flow available, or if it's because you've graduated for years, but you were focusing on something else for the cash mm-hmm. flow, and now you finally have excess. But yes, mm-hmm. if you have excess cash flow, where to allocate it. And that the first one I had was the 401k to the match. The next one I have on here, and this is intentionally together, is build cash and pay off consumer debt. So what you had asked a moment ago, Adrian, about cash flow, I've very often seen people that will come to us, and now that they've paid off their consumer debt and they say, okay, now I can save, I think it's important to build the cash and pay that off simultaneously. And specifically, we're looking at high rate consumer debts, things like credit cards, not the mortgage and a car. You know, I think it depends on who you talk to, whether you consider that consumer debt or not. The first thing I point out is if it's a high rate, you got to get rid of it. But there'll be some that'll say, well, you need a car, and if you have a good rate, get a loan. There are others that'll say, always pay for a car in cash. So I'm leaving that in the gray area. But the other debts, like a mortgage and student loan, those I wouldn't necessarily call consumer debt. So when I say build cash, that's build your cash on hand, anywhere from a minimum of 2 months to up to 6 months of cash for any emergencies that may arise, and then pay off consumer debt. Here I'm referring to any credit cards that you've got or any high interest rate debt that you have. The reason I put this down together, why I don't have them ranked two or three, why I put them as the same thing, is if you do have consumer debt, in order to get out of it, you need to build cash. And I've talked to many people about this over the years. I call this the debt cycle. So let's just say hypothetically, and I'm picking round numbers again, you've got $10,000 in consumer debt, in credit card debt, and you're gradually paying that down. Let's say you're paying $1,000 a month. 5 months go by, it's down to $5,000, and you haven't saved any cash in the bank, it's down to $5,000, and then there's an emergency. The car needs a repair, there's a home repair, something comes up, and you use that card because you don't have cash, you don't have another option. You use that card, and maybe it's $1,000 cost. So now you went down to five, you're up to six. What'll often happen to people is they'll slip. Now that they've used the credit card once, they'll keep using it, and they'll get up to the threshold where they're uncomfortable, which in this example is $10,000. So now it's back up to $10,000. Then they think, oh, I've got to focus on it to pay it off. Then they start paying it down again. And then they have this cycle where they're between 5 and 10. It just sort of bounces around. Building cash. So in this same example, let's say instead of paying $1,000 a month to the credit card, you've paid $500 a month to the credit card and you've saved $500. Now we're 5 months down the road. You've got $2,500 in savings, and your credit card is down to $7,500 instead of the $5,000 from the earlier example. You have the issue with the $1,000 car repair come up. Well, you just take that out of your cash. You keep paying $500 down to the credit cards. Yes, you'll be paying more in interest with this methodology. However, you're more likely able to eliminate your debt permanently this way because that cash is there for the emergencies. You don't slip on the debt by having one charge that causes you to have more, and then eventually it gets paid off permanently, and you've got this cash on hand. So for me, the first thing I had said was the 401k to the match, next building the cash and paying off consumer debt simultaneously.
Yeah, I mean, there's not much I can add there. I definitely like how you added those two together. It's just a way for your emergency fund to protect you from any setbacks that may happen, so you can focus on paying down these high interest rates, which are just hard to keep up with and keep pace with.
Yeah, and some of those numbers are high. You know, we're recently seeing data on, we're starting to see more and more consumers not able to pay off their debt right now. So I think it's an important one.
Mm-hmm. And then that just goes back to the cash flow, which we talked about. It's so important. If you have a very strong income, but you're starting to take a lot of debt on with high interest, you can feel like that's just eating away at that income that you have going in the door, which could limit your financial decisions and what you can do and how you can allocate your capital.
Yes. And, you know, flexibility is really what you want, right? You want to be able to have options with your finances, options with your life. The next thing I have on here are the insurance needs. This is where, you know, depending on your age and your situation, we're talking about disability insurance, life insurance, and long-term care insurance. These are the things that could cause you to lose some of your goals, because they can be very, if you have a need in this space, so with disability, for example, if you're disabled, it could ruin you financially. So looking at the insurances, the disability, life insurance, and long-term care insurances, I think are an important thing to do to make sure you're protected. I don't like wasting money. Right. And with the insurances, I would not call them a waste. I would call having too much a waste. So what you want to do here is make sure you figure out what you need and get exactly what you need. And Adrian mentioned earlier your cash flow and your personal financial situation, your goals. We talked about building cash. All these things, where you stand in for all these things, will help you determine what type of insurance needs you have. So As I mentioned, I don't like waste, but I've got the insurances myself. And I think at the very least, you've got to look into what type of insurance need do you have and what type of insurance should you get. And if you decide not to get any insurance at all, that's okay too. But I think you've got to at least understand the risk you're taking. So
yes,
I have the insurances in here next for that, those reasons.
I agree. And I think when you say look into, I think this is where we have the conversation or the plan in place where we do scenario planning. And I think that's vital here where you say, all right, what are the risks out there? What really applies to my situation? What can impact my goals? And run the numbers. And this will help you make more informed decisions and see which route you want to take. Maybe you run the numbers and you say, hey, maybe I can live without this type of insurance. Or, hey, if this happens, I would really be upset if I can't get this goal or if this happens to me. Running the numbers and running the scenarios is very key here when you talk about insurance. So you have all the options laid out so you can make the best possible decision here.
Yeah, completely agree. Now, next, you've got these pieces in place for your foundation. This is, Adrian, where I've got listed. Now we've really got to focus on the goals, because mm-hmm. I think what you save, where you save, and the amounts to each category will be based on these goals. And the first one I've got listed on here is the home down payment, right? I do think buying a home, if your situation is such that you're likely to stay where you are for, you know, 5 years or more, then I think looking into buying a home is a good thing. But it also depends on the individual situation, right? If you're at a job or in a work situation where you think, well, I might not be here very long, or I might be moving. If you're not going to stay in the property for, you know, about 5 years or 5 years or more, it's probably, this may not be a high ranking goal, but I do have getting the down payment together in order to buy a home as an important goal. And typically that's a shorter term goal. So we look at building cash for that, or shorter term investments, short term bonds, things like that.
I mean, that's a good one. I think what you're kind of playing into for this one is making sure that you're structuring your investments to support your goals here, because I mean, you're talking about a short-term goal here, having a down payment for your home. And if your investments don't support that, let's just say it comes time to purchase the home and your investments aren't performing in line with how you want to come up with this down payment, then that can really put you into a tough position here. So how you structured your invest, depending on what your goals are, really drives on how you're going to allocate your capital here.
Yes, completely. And so I was looking at this as if you've built the things or addressed the things previously. So you've mm-hmm. addressed that 401k to the match, you've built your cash and you've gotten rid of the consumer debt, your insurance needs are in order. Now we're focusing on allocating your excess savings towards your goals. And if you don't have a home already, I would view that as a high priority, purchasing the home. A few reasons. One is, you will need a place to live. So if you don't have a home already, unless you're living with family or your parents or something, you're paying rent. So that's one thing. So that the rent, instead of going to someone else and rent continues to go up, your mortgage, you know, excluding refinancing, the mortgage you get will continue at that same rate. So the price will be the same. Your monthly payment will be the same. Next, part of your mortgage will go towards interest. And part of it goes towards paying down the mortgage or principal. So you are building equity in this home along the way, whereas when you're renting, the rental rate goes up and you're not really building any equity. So I think if you don't have a home, getting a plan in place to purchase one will probably be a good move, because homes typically appreciate in value. So a lot of times you look at this as housing and an investment together, and it's a positive for both of those things for you typically. But we want to make sure you have that time frame.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree.
And I said based on goals, and I'm doing this just what we typically see, and with what is usually the shortest term to the longest term. The next one we'll typically see is, if you have children, education savings. So saving for your children's education, that's another good thing to do. Now, I'll see a variety of things on here, from one extreme of people saying, I don't want to fund for the kids' education. Well, that's fine. Don't save anything towards that. Move on to the next step. And the other, where people not only want to fund fully for an undergrad, they want to fund for advanced degrees as well. So we'll look at things to save towards here, things like, you know, 529 plans, which you look into at your state. They may offer you a state tax deduction. Typically, you can put money in here after tax. It'll grow tax deferred, meaning you're not paying taxes every year on it. And when you take it out for education, it's tax free. So there's good tax benefits in there for you, possibly a deduction now, but you do get the tax-free growth. The other thing for education we'll look at is just having a regular investment account in your name. So you, as the parent, saving money for your child. The reason we look at an investment account is you've got flexibility to use it for anything you see fit along the way. I'll give you a recent example. It's about 2 or 3 years old. I had clients that were saving for their kids' education, and they were saving for the beach house. Well, interest rates dropped below 3%. They decided to buy their beach house early. They dipped into the kids' education fund. With their cash flow, they were able to catch up on that later. But if that was all in a 529 plan, they wouldn't have been able to take advantage of those rates and get that family beach house. So that's why we look at the investment account in addition to the 529. There are other education savings vehicles out there as well that we will review on a case-by-case basis. These are just some of the more popular ones we end up talking to our clients about.
Yeah, and having that flexibility can be crucial when it comes to making your decision as well. If you're not really sure what the future holds, then that might fuel your decision. If you want to try and get a tax benefit, it might make you go the other way. I mean, it's a lot of options out there too. And we can also talk about how if you go the 529 route as well, there is new things out there where you can actually convert that 529 to a Roth now. And you also have a flexibility as well if you want to change the beneficiary. So that might be another option out there as well, where it gives you a little bit more room to be more flexible here if you go that route.
Yeah, and Adrian, can you elaborate on those two things? I think those are great features of the 529. First, with the changing of the beneficiary, can you explain how that works?
Yeah, so that's just the name pretty much speaks for itself, where if you have a 529 set up for somebody and for whatever reason you don't think that they're going to be using the money in that account for education as well, and you want to avoid any penalties or any taxes that come with it, you can change the beneficiary on there for somebody that can use that for education.
Yeah. And so I think of the example I had of clients not only funding for undergrad, but thinking about funding advanced degrees. Mm-hmm. Well, if their child doesn't choose to use it for advanced degrees, they can use the 529 money for grandchildren, for themselves, if they go back to school, or anyone. The Roth is an interesting one also, Adrian, that you mentioned. Can you elaborate on that as well? That's a new one, and I think it makes the 529 that much more powerful.
Yeah, and you can just fill in for like the time frame part, but if you have your 529 for a specific time frame, it'll allow you to convert it over to a Roth. And I think that's something that can help people's decision making, where typically if you had a 529, your only really option was to use it for education or change the beneficiary, but now you have the ability to convert it over to a Roth.
Yeah, and that's brand new. That's actually a part of the Secure Act 2.0, if I remember correctly, last year, but it goes into effect this year being 2024. And I believe you've got to leave it there for 15 years, but I would want to confirm that. The concept, though, Adrian, as you described, is excellent. So if you have leftover money in a 529, your child can convert that money to a Roth IRA, and their tax-free education money can now be tax-free retirement money for the child. Mm-hmm. So it's a great benefit. It's a great option. I definitely agree with that. Now, next on here, I've got retirement. So let's just say you're past these goals, or you've saved enough for all the goals we've mentioned, the major ones, the home down payment, the education planning, and you're maximizing the 401k, you built your cash, you don't have consumer debt, your insurances are in order, and you're now planning and saving for retirement. The next thing you'd look at is the Roth IRA, right? Assuming you qualify, because there are income limitations, you put your money into the Roth IRA after tax. So you pay taxes on it already, and then it grows tax deferred, meaning you're not paying taxes every year on it. And at the end, when you take it out, it's tax free. So with the Roth IRA, that's what I've listed next on here. Once that's accomplished and full, you can look at maximizing your 401k or an investment account, depending on your goals and where things stand. The maximizing the 401k, that'll give you a tax savings today. So you're saving money on taxes today. It grows tax deferred, meaning you don't pay taxes every year on it. And then when you take it out, it's tax free. But it is for retirement. And if you take it out for other reasons, barring a few exceptions, you do pay penalties on it before 55 or 59 and a half. And so that's where the investment account might prove to be superior for you. If you do have some of these shorter term goals out there, or if you think there may be some of these shorter term goals out there. Adrian, would you have anything to add or anything you would change on that?
So I guess an important part that plays into this, and if you can expand more on this, Roshan, that would be great, is just being as tax efficient as possible when it comes to not only funding these accounts, but setting up the investments. I mean, this could be very crucial depending on what tax bracket you're in and when it comes time to eventually pull money from these accounts as well. How your investments perform are definitely important, but doing it in a tax efficient way can be very beneficial and help your future self when it comes to pulling money out for this in retirement.
Yes, I thought of a couple things when you said that. One is, and we've talked about this before, asset location. Mm-hmm. Where yes. are your certain investments? So just as an example, your Roth IRA, because the money will grow tax deferred and you can take it out tax free, you want what you believe will have the most growth in the Roth IRA, because that's the most tax-free money for you later. And so you'd want to balance that. If you have more of your growth pieces in the Roth IRA, you may have to have greater than your target asset allocation percentage towards income in your 401k or your regular investment account to offset the fact that your Roth IRA is a little bit more aggressive. So I think that's a very important point as well. What investments do you have where, and how do you manage that portfolio?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. And then just going back to what we talked about, how you're structuring your investments, I think that's vital. I mean, if you feel like you've achieved all your goals and you're in a very comfortable position, you really should just do an overall review of your portfolio. Do you have to take on whatever degree of risk you're currently taking on right now, or can you trim back some? I think that's all something where you have to just review on an annual basis as well, just to see if that's something that is true today and will be true a year, 5 years, or 10 years from now as well, just so you're not going to hit any setbacks or subjected to any market volatility out there.
Yeah, and Adrian, you mentioned reviewing this on an annual basis. I'd say that's probably the minimum we like to do, because we'll look at this dynamically. So as a client has a change, they'll let us know and we'll incorporate it into their plan right away, not necessarily waiting till our next meeting, scheduling something earlier, or, you know, I'll get emails saying, hey, I'm thinking about doing this. And then I'll do a scenario for the client for that and then send it back to them. So I would say definitely at least annual, but, you know, dynamically as things change along the way, it's definitely worth your review.
Mm-hmm. Yep, I agree with that, Roshan. Thanks for putting that in.
Yeah. Adrian, that's my list. Is there anything on yours that we did not touch on?
We covered everything on my list. I mean, they lined up pretty well together, and I really enjoyed our conversation. I think we had a, a lot of great points and a lot of topics that really require more homework, more planning. But once you get it set in place and really have reviewed it, it is very beneficial for people in the long run.
Yes, and I hope everyone found this helpful. We'll be back with another great episode next time of the Retirement Lifestyle Show. Please like, subscribe, give us 5 stars, tell your friends and family. Send this link to anyone that you feel like you're further along and they need to get their foundation set up. Please send this on to them. Reach out to us if you need help and take control and achieve your goals.
Schedule a conversation with Roshan, Adrian, or Eric today at retirementlifestyleshow.com. Roshan and Eric are certified financial planner practitioners. They, along with Adrian, are investment advisor representatives and serve clients across the U.S. with financial planning and investment advice through RHA Wealth. If you found this show helpful, gained knowledge, or enjoyed the time you spent with us, tell your friends and leave us a 5-star review. This will help others discover the show. To access our show notes, to download any of the tools mentioned in today's podcast, to ask us a question, or to schedule a conversation, go to retirementlifestyleshow.com. All opinions expressed by podcast hosts and guests are solely their own. While based on information they believe is reliable, neither RHA Wealth nor its affiliates warrants its completeness or accuracy, nor do their opinions reflect the opinion of RHA Wealth. This podcast is for general informational purposes only and should not be regarded as specific advice or recommendations for any individual. Before making any decisions, consult a professional. The show hosts offer investment advice through RHA Wealth Advisors, LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor, and securities through RHA Wealth Management, LLC, member FINRA, SIPC, and NFA. Finally, our music is The Chance by Jason Shaw and Audionautix. It's part of the YouTube Audio Library, and it's licensed under a Creative Commons license. I am Ray Voices. Thank you for listening.